just to start off it, my story is going to be very much the same way as Phil. I think everyone, including myself, had a feeling that when we come to Baba, it's a one-shot kind of thing, and you see him, and you go like this, and it's all over. Just isn't that way. When I was with Baba, he said that I should tell others of his message of love and truth. And I really had no idea that there were so many people who wanted to hear of it and who were so eager to share in the experience. I'm really glad to see it. I heard it, Bob, at first from Nick Anushi and Bob Dreyfus. They were all in Santa Barbara about 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago, exactly in the fall. And they had just returned from seeing Baba. And Nick gave me a little card with Baba's picture on it. And I really looked at that old guy in that picture. Really, really, something struck a bell because I read some things and why I didn't like and I heard this and that. But the picture really, really rung true in my heart. I felt it. This was really, in fact, the Ancient One. So I asked Megan, was she eager we all about their experiences in India, how they heard of filing, how they got there, maps and charts and the train fare from Istanbul to Tehran, and made notes about absolutely everything I could, and thought, wow, I just got to go and see this man, there's no question. Then they said, well, he's in seclusion, you can't go now, you know, he's not possible to see Bob until announcement is set out that it's sent out that his seclusion is over. So I thought, wow, it's just my luck. Finally, I hear with the Ancient One and know where he's at and have a rough idea of how to get there. He's in seclusion. So I kept in touch and tried to find out and listen for further news. And finally, in the late summer, the summer before this one, there was a rumor that Baba would be out of seclusion, which is plenty for me. They said Baba's seclusion may end, I believe it was in September, October, I don't even remember now, of 67. And so I said, wow, got to leave. And I went to I went to New York to take a plane to Europe. I had been in Mexico for the year before, and when I came to New York, I learned about getting all papers, this and that, and I did very little planning of how I was going to make this trip. I hadn't seen Nick Anushi for a long time, and nothing was certain that Baba was coming out of this seclusion or that he was going to give darshan if he in fact came out of this seclusion. And so my friend saw me off to the airplane, and well, this is the Icelandic flight, incidentally. It's the usual run between Europe and the States. I think it's the cheapest commercial flight. It should be. It's the only plane running out of Kennedy Airport these days. You bring your own food, that kind of thing. But so my friend saw me off to the airport. And as I was waiting to get on the plane, someone came right out of the plane was just going onto the runway. It was setting in the strip there. And some person came up. He had a long beard, long hair. And he said, are you going to see if you love it, Baba? And I said, yeah. I really was shocked because the friends that had taken me to the airport were also Baba lovers. And so here was the influence again, and I thought I was going to the end of the earth at that point. So he gave me a map of India and clearly marked where Ahmednagar was, and he disappeared. This guy just completely disappeared. And so I thought, and so I got off the plane. And in Luxembourg, which is a small country, it's between France and Germany, incidentally. So I thought I'd intended to go directly to Paris, where I had some friends. And then I ended up, somehow I went to Frankfurt instead. I had $22 when I got off the plane, so it was cheaper to go to Frankfurt in one thing or another. I had heard that Nick and Uchi had at one time been in Frankfurt, and this is now a year since I'd last seen them. So I went to Frankfurt, and the next day I was in Nick and Uchi's house. They were shocked because they had no idea that I was on my way through, that I had in fact left to see Baba. And I just walked right into their house. So I was greeted with the news that Baba's darshan had been postponed, that he was going into further seclusion, that there was no date as to when people would be permitted to come. Furthermore, Nick and Uchi had both been restricted. They weren't allowed to come back to India again at this point. That was Baba's orders when they had been with him. And they had just returned from several months at the Indian border, where they were waiting to dash across when Baba gave permission. And they explained that it was very, very unlikely that I would see Baba. And so I was really caught in a dilemma. I didn't know if I should go on. I had very little money. I couldn't get any job. And meanwhile, winter was setting in. And the overland route to India is through Turkey, which is just one huge range of mountains. And winter is very, very difficult trip going through Turkey in winter. And so I hesitated and hesitated more and more. And Mick and Uchi were saying, well, it's going to be harder and harder and harder, and you should go before the snow gets real bad there, or you should return and start over. And I was really uncertain as to what to do. And so finally, after all, I was a month with them. I went to Paris for a little while, and I finally said, wow, I've just got to go and chance it. And the thing about this is that when Baba gives an order to someone, one obeys it to the best of one's ability. There's no question. One doesn't stop and think, well, I wonder if Baba's made a mistake or if he's aware of this or that. You know? And so I wasn't certain at this point that my entering India would have repercussions, because sometimes when one does something, other Baba lovers from somewhere else say, hey, what's that guy doing, you know, and he had this instruction and he disobeyed that, why is this allowed, and so on and so on. So I didn't want to make any kind of scene like that if it was possible to avoid. But on the other hand, I just couldn't hold out, so I went on to India then, and was really, really difficult. I met many Baba lovers on the way, many people who'd heard of Baba. And finally I entered when I got to Istanbul or Tehran, somewhere along the line before actually entering India, the announcement was sent out that Baba would be seen as, that Baba's seclusion would probably end at his birthday celebration, which was February 25th of the last February. So I thought, well, this is just really perfect. You know, I just get there in such a way that I get to Delhi in just time enough that I can go straight down to Bombay and straight to Ahmednagar. And then there'll be no difficulty. No one will say that I went against any of Baba's instructions, and I have enough money, I'll be able to see Baba, everything's going to work out. And I had everything all worked out in my head. And I got to Delhi, and there's a little circular, you know, that Baba's seclusion is definitely not over, that it's going to be going on until, they said at this point, March 25th. And so then also there are a couple of letters there from people saying, how come you're there? Because Baba's orders were that no one is supposed to enter India. And someone else wrote and said, you know, we're glad you were there, and this and that. I was trying to sort all that out. to some people really have been angered at the fact that I'd gone, and I was trying to weigh if I was in fact in violation of Baba's orders. Or then someone wrote and said that it was good and that Baba hadn't said no one should enter India, but that no one should go to Ahmednagar. So I took that as final. I thought, well, that's really nice. I'm really close now. And it's only 1 month. So I just carry on for this month. And I wrote down to a... Baba has a secretary. I don't know how many of you are familiar or how much, but his name is Adi Arani. And so I wrote Adi and said, you know, I'm in Delhi and I've come to see Baba. And I heard about Baba from Mick and Rishi, and I've read this and I've read that, and I'm just waiting for darshan to be given. And as soon as Baba's seclusion is completed, please send me a note, and then I'll zip straight down to Ahmednagar. And so Adi wrote that very kind letter and said, keep me informed of where you are so that I can get a hold of you as soon as the seclusion is over and as soon as we're allowed to talk to Baba, because even the Mandali wasn't seeing Baba at this point. And as soon as something definite is arranged, we'll notify you. So I thought, oh, that's really nice. We'll go up to Kathmandu for a little while, and we went into Nepal and kept adding form of our dress. And any day we just thought, oh, it's so nice here, and any moment I was going to bring us up and say, come down. And everything seemed so clear, and so it seemed like there was no way things could go wrong at this point. So then something went wrong. Baba's plans changed once again, or so it appeared to us. I was dead as a result of the new circular which said Baba was going to be in seclusion until May 21st. So this was 2 more months, and things were starting to stretch a little thin at this point. Resources, our nerves, our expectations seeing Baba had been put off, you know. And so as a result, we began to read more and more about Baba and try and get closer and closer to him and visit Baba centers and disciples of 30 years standing in centers in Calcutta. And we tried getting more and more informed and more ready to see Baba. And our expectation, I was just really excited. And I thought, oh, when I see him, this is going to happen, and that's going to happen. And I had all kind of ideas about what it was going to be like, and what I was going to say, and what he was going to gesture, and what the atmosphere would be. And expectations rose and rose, and desire to see Baba rose and rose. And so we made arrangements. I wrote Adi and said, I know that we're not supposed to come to Ahmednagar, and we're going to move south so that we'll be directly east of Ahmednagar, which will be as close as we can come. And we'll just be able to come straight over in just a few hours as soon as Baba gives the darshan. We'll be able to come directly to Ahmednagar. And so we moved down the coast, down the east coast, and we waited there for what was to be the March, May 21st, Emmy of Darshan. This goes on for months more. It got harder and harder and harder because every time for these first few postponements, Baba's darshan was set at a new date. Now, I'm sure it wasn't, in fact, this way with Baba, but the circulars that came out, when we were in Calcutta, there were people packing, literally getting reservations on the train. When the new circular came out, they were rushing down and changing their tickets, and they were all ready to go. When Indians travel, they have trunks like this, about 5 per person for a weekend stay. So they had everything set up. The Baba centers were just as busy like beehives. These people were just ready to flash straight down. And some of them had never seen Baba, you know. Some had been with Baba, but the majority had never seen Baba before. And this being their first opportunity, they were just really eager. And so when we did it, they said, oh, yeah, oh, it's going to be 2 months and everything and this and that, and we're getting all ready, and you can go with us. And, oh, they're making arrangements to meet their relatives from all over the United States. It's going to be really soon, you know, and everybody was so certain it was going to happen that we just got even more carried up. And so then with this note, we went further east and wrote Adi once again and said we were staying such and such an ashram and that things were okay and we were reading and so-and-so had lent us so many books and we read this many books and we've been doing this and that, repeating the prayers. Baba had given at this point two prayers which he asked everyone to recite out loud daily. And so we kept Adi informed about all that we had been doing, and Adi kept writing back very patiently that he hoped we would be able to see Baba and that he would notify us as soon as it was possible. And he'd send us occasionally addresses of other Baba lovers and say, well, you should contact this man. And he saw Baba in such and such a time. And there's so many people here, and we visited and visited. And so then the next postponement from May 21st was till July 25th. So this was June, this was another 2 month delay. And I had been traveling from Tehran with a French guy that I'd met in Mexico and known in Paris. We were very close. And he had pressures building up. I didn't know anything about it at the time. That his father was ill, his family was in a bad, bad state in Paris. And they were urging him to come home. And our resources were completely drained. I was broke, and Danny had very little money left. Things started getting really hard. And Mick knew, she kept saying, wow, what are you doing in the south? Don't you know monsoon is coming? As soon as it starts raining down there, you're going to boil and drown and all these terrible things. There's this disease and that disease, and oh man, we thought, really, it's too much here. And we've got to go north. So that was darshan. Now it's postponed until July, so we have 2 more months. And now it is beginning to become a matter of survival. It's just a matter of hanging on at this point. We still were completely convinced that Baba's darshan would be July 25th, exactly like you said. And we were all prepared to go straight to our mandala. It was just a matter of another 2 months, and the expectations had started to fall off. We were kind of thinking, wow, this is really strange, you know, because if all this was happening, maybe some of the other things we thought would happen and might and this and that. We had no idea what to expect. And so we just said, well, we'll stay alive and try and make it down then. And we went back up to Calcutta. And from the time we left, we'd stay in this ashram, maybe some of you have heard of, I don't know, it's called the Sri Aurobindo Ashram. It's there's a Holy Mother there. And it's a really, really beautiful place. We had 3 meals a day in the most peaceful, holy surroundings, everyone eating, very gentle prayers going on during meals, and meditations every evening, and all really, really intense day program, just spiritual from the time we got up. And so this atmosphere, we had been there for maybe a month or two, but it had become really a part of us. And everything just flowed so gently. And when India's, when things are going right and when they're peaceful and calm, and India's like nowhere else on earth, is really wonderful. And this was the epitome of that in our stay there. So that every day was just filled. We were right on the ocean, and every night was just beautiful, and the day it was warm, and everything was going just right. So then we said, wow, man, we have no more money. We can't stay here. We can't really do this, that. We got to go north. And it was a bit of a drag leaving, because we were made. We've been waiting all these months on getting closer and closer to Baba. Now we're going up another 1,000 miles away from him. And so as we started up north, the monsoon came. And came early, came at 1:30. And it was huge downpours. There were snakes and frogs crossing the road so thick you couldn't see a thing, you know. So it was a huge ocean of moving creatures. And this went on all the way to Calcutta. Really, really remarkable. And we got back up. We'd stayed in Puri, which is one of the four sacred places in India, the four most sacred places. And we'd been there for a month. And the whole time we'd been there, it had been sunshine from the time we got up. We went swimming all day long, had rocks, went to the temple. And we got back up there this time. And Puri was really incredibly dirty, rainy, foggy, hot. It was just completely unbearable. And we just kind of wandered around for a couple of days trying to find out what had happened. It was astounding that a place had changed so much. And it just was like a completely different world in this town. And we'd been for a month there in perfect conditions. So then we went to Calcutta, which is really bad any time you go there. But during monsoon, it was just really incredible. The night we got there, the day we got there, it was boiling hot, which is to be expected. It was really filthy and really a drag, because Calcutta is kind of like is a very busy, hectic scene, like the States in a way. And yet it's really, everything is broken down and dilapidated. And right in the downtown district, there had been three light poles that were just completely eroded and crashed down in the street. And the whole city looks like it's ready to go up any moment. And the Kali is the goddess there. It's the goddess of destruction. No matter when you're in Calcutta, it feels like there's going to be any minute the whole thing's going to go. The post is always on strike. The railway cars always break down. There's always a pile of litter and garbage trucks that have collided and just been left. It's just a completely destroyed scene. So when we got there, it was really hot, and it was a real drag to be back in Calcutta. I'd been there a couple of times and had really bad experiences and gotten out as quick as possible. And now we got there, and it was really hot and wet, and I'm thinking, wow, this is really miserable. My friends say, well, I'm getting out of here, I'm going here, I'm going there, and I'm not staying in Calcutta, and I didn't have the money to leave. And it started raining. And I said, wow, we've got to go and see the Baba Center again, time we're back, and that we stayed here and there and talked with everybody, right, Adi. So we started off from the other side of Calcutta. And before we got there, the streetcar had broken down. When the rains came higher, the streetcar flooded. And everyone left, and we waded through wasting water for the last three blocks to this guy's house. And the only thing that ran for the next 2 days was boats in the streets of Calcutta. So everything was just completely screwed up. So like when India gets bad, it's really, there's nowhere on earth that can be as confused and depressing as India when things are going wrong. So at this point, my friend said he had to go to Paris, that he had to return and see his father. And he said he was just leaving. He went off, he left Calcutta and he went to Delhi. So I was in, oh man, I was in Calcutta, I don't know, 5 weeks or 6 weeks or so. And I started getting this real strong urge that, wow, man, I really hope Baba was going to come out of seclusion, because there was no way that anything was going to get any better. It kept getting more and more depressing, and things kept getting worse and worse, which I felt was unbelievable. Our friend went up to Kathmandu. These people, two Italians that had been waiting to see Kathmandu for I don't know how many years. It was their dream place. And in an attempt to artificially do what Baba had done to us, they drove all through southern India so that they were longing for this vision of Kathmandu. So it may get greater and greater as they got closer and closer. And they went zooming up to Kathmandu, and they left me in Calcutta, and I got this letter, and they said, wow, man, there's no shit here in Kathmandu. And I thought, wow, this really must be the end, you know? we're not going to see Baba before this, or he gets the road, you know, because this is an impossible situation. And so they've been in a state of ruin. My friend wrote and said, my father's health is getting worse and worse, and I'm going to have to leave Delhi immediately. They say he's going to die soon. And all the news that was coming in was just worse and worse. And then two or three other good friends had just come down from Kathmandu. And this one guy was so sick, he laid in his bed in this real cheap flop house. And he was just completely zonked out. And he said, wow, man, what, you have hepatitis or dysentery? What's wrong? And he didn't want to talk about it. He didn't care if he got up or not. And two or three other people, same thing happened to them. And so they all ended up in this motley hospital. And really, things got really heavy. And it became totally a matter of life and death and the illusion as we were seeing it. So finally, after weeks and weeks of this, I just said that I couldn't stay in Calcutta anymore. I went to Delhi. And I had a visa. When the thing had reached its complete apex, Adi wrote and said that Baba's seclusion was indefinitely, the end of the seclusion was indefinitely postponed, that no new date had been set, and that there was probably no chance of seeing him before fall of 69 or maybe spring of 69, which was a year more, you know. And we went, oh, wow, it's really I don't know how to handle that. My friend, he'd split by this time. And I thought, wow, it's fall of 69. And so I went and talked to these people, and they said, man, go home. You know, you don't belong here. The Baba Center in Calcutta said, really, you should go home now. And he's quite clear about it. He's not going to be seeing anyone. And you should take his love and you should take his blessing and you should return home. And I thought, wow, this is really, really heavy. And Adi wrote then, and he said, man, you should really return home. And Adi had been so kind and considerate. Every time there was a postponement, he made copious notes of our addresses and how to get a hold of us and what our movements were and what our status with the Indian government was and how our visas were. And he was sending us advice right and left and everything. He was really kind and patient. And now Adi just wrote this real heavy letter that was quite obvious we weren't meant to see Baba and we should leave. And so I thought, wow, really, I went over it really, really intensely. I wrote back and I told Adi, you know, that I thought it all over and I talked to everybody I could and I taken his letter and read it several times and I put everything together and it was quite clear to me that I had to go home, that there was absolutely no way I could manage staying in India any longer, that I'd had enough and that I thought things out and the real reasonable, intelligent thing to do was go home, but I said, I can't. So I said, you know, if this is Baba's order, if Baba's told you that I'm to go home, or if Baba wishes me to go home, or if it's such that, you know, Baba directs me to go home, I said, okay, you know, I'll go. That's really what he's saying, without condition or qualification. You know, then I'll do it. But I said on my own, I can't possibly. And so Adi wrote back again. He said, well, I read your letter to Baba, and he said I couldn't handle it myself, and I think you better go about trying to get a new Indian visa and try and get something going this and that and stay and we'll just see and maybe there's some chance of seeing Baba in the fall of 69, a couple more months, or maybe there'll be some new word and we're really not sure where Baba's at the moment regarding the seclusion, and take it all as his will, Baba sends his love and blessing. So I thought, wow, it's really too much. Now I was faced with the scene of staying and that wasn't any too desirable at this time. So I went to Delhi, and Delhi's the only place in India where there's any chance of getting any money if you don't have any, or making out on a reasonable level if you aren't before you get there. It's where everyone goes is when everything else has fallen through, to try and scrape some last ditch effort up to stay. So I had hair like this and then a beard, and I said, well, I got to go to Delhi, I got to get a new visa. First of all, they're going to run me out of India. And I'd already had 6 months of visa, and that was closing in. And so I went, cut my hair, not so short, but I went in decent appearance. And Delhi's really, really, they're really rigid about that. Because the Indians have absolutely no conception whatsoever of why anyone would come to India from the outside world. They have absolutely no idea why anyone from America or Europe is there. It completely blows their minds in the first place. And then when they see them there without money, it's just really shocking. So in Delhi is really not good to, you know, it's the one place in India where you have to maintain some sort of maintaining, or you have trouble. So I got to Delhi, and my French friend was there. This had been almost a month now since he'd left Calcutta. And I said, wow, what's happening? You know, I thought you'd left and all these things. And so his father had gotten worse and worse, and he decided that he had to leave. And he'd gotten everything ready, his permits, his visa, everything was all set. He was just ready to leave India. And he calculated every cent when you cross the border. Many of you know that you always try and get rid of your last money of the country you're in, so that you don't have any left on the other side, which is no good to you as soon as you get across the border. So he worked it all out, how many Indian rupees he needed, how much he had to change at the border for Pakistani rupees, and had everything sorted out. And the night he was going to leave, he had been delayed in getting his road permit, and so he couldn't spend any more money to stay in a hotel. And he went to a park in Delhi, and he just laid out outside that night. He had his bag like this around his neck, with his papers and his money and everything in it. And somebody snipped it like this. And so he woke up with no passport, no papers, no money, no anything. And so he wrote at this point, he cabled his parents, and they said that his father had gotten much more serious than the time he hadn't written, that he had to return immediately. And so he got, his parents sent him money for a plane ticket or something. And we went to the airport that night. This was Independence Day, maybe August 15th. So he got his papers, and because he was flying directly from Delhi to Paris, he didn't need a passport. So he got in the plane and he went to Paris. And there are other people in India who'd been waiting to see, some incidentally friends of Mekanuchi's who'd been waiting for a long time to see Baba. And many others I'd met were very, very anxious to meet Baba. And so my friends had been, these same friends that were very good Baba lovers, there were several, four or five, and they had a big dope ring going, you know, they were all into dealing. And they'd been always trying to get me into this scene, you know, I kept saying, wow, Baba says this about drugs, and he says that about drugs, and there's just no way I can get into this. And I'd been into dealing once before. I really just held out as absolutely long as I could, because I knew what Baba's feelings were. And I told him always, no, you know, I'll do without money, I'll find something else. And you know, I don't want to get into this at all. Finally, with this last indefinite postponement, man, they were all in Delhi when I got here, and they said, oh, are we glad to see you, man. We need somebody to go here and go there and take a boat over there and get this and bring it here. And you get so much money and all this and your expenses and take some of that. And, really look good. And I knew what Baba said. I knew there was no way I could kid myself that what I was about to do had anything to do with loving Baba or serving Baba. But I just couldn't face being without money anymore in India. And so I said, wow, man, I've got to do it, you know. But like, I really want to make it clear that, you know, it's a one-shot thing, and I have absolutely, really was only because I'm pressured into this, and really, I tried building a strong case. They was going, yeah, sure, man, sure. I didn't care the least bit, man. So I felt really miserable, and this was the first night we're staying in a real nice hotel in Delhi, and they're mapping out everything, giving me letters for everybody in half the world, saying, you tell this guy that, you give this to so-and-so, and you take that boat, and it leaves at such and such a time. And they've got this map of Asia drawn out, you know, and I have to use this like this and so on, and maybe Bob is at the end of it when the seclusion's over, and I go. So I felt really miserable because I knew that this was something I really shouldn't get into. And yet, the alternative of leaving India and not seeing Baba was worse than the alternative of not doing anything at all and just waiting without money is completely, completely impossible after a certain point. So I said, okay, no, I make this run. And all night I felt really rotten. I was to leave it the next day. I felt really bad when these things were seeing heavy. And that morning, Adi sent a cable and said, Baba wants you to come immediately to America. these people, I really am anxious right from the get, because they were all really, they love Baba, no question of joking about that. They love Baba, but wow, I really messed up their plans, because they made all the arrangements, and I just said, sorry, man, I'm going straight to Ahmednagar, and that was the end of that. So, Adi asked me in his telegram, I can't remember the exact word he was on, but he said, please make absolutely sure you're on time, cable me back this. And I found out later that Adi had sent this identical cable to Calcutta and to two or three other places, and those people had sent it to two or three other places, so that there was no chance that I could miss it. And I went down and cabled Adi and said, I'm on my way, I will be on time. The appointment had been set for 9 o'clock on October 9th. And so I wrote Adi, I cabled him and said, I'll be on time, there's no, don't worry, everything's okay. So I got on the train and I went to Bombay. And my understanding of where Ahmednagar is, for some completely insane reason, is completely confused. Because I know Bombay is here. My understanding was that Ahmednagar was 120 miles from Bombay. And that Pune is 120 miles from Bombay, and my understanding was that Ahmednagar is right near Pune. And Baba, as you may know, stays these days in a little house called Meherazad. It's about 9 miles from Ahmednagar. But Ahmednagar, unlike I thought, is many hours from Pune. And the rest of the time I was staying in Pune during monsoon. And so this is incidentally where the darshan will be in April, this coming spring will be in Pune. So I thought, wow, Pune, Ahmednagar, I hear these two words just like salt and pepper. They must be right by each other. And so when I got to Bombay, I said, I've never been to Bombay before, because I didn't want to risk any difficulty with the other Baba lovers. Baba had sent out circulars time and again saying, please don't come to Ahmednagar. And all these crazy Indians kept showing up and writing down saying, well, we're here, we want to see Baba. And they said, oh, he's in seclusion. So Baba's circulars, I don't know how they were in the States. I imagine they were, you know, quite clear that no one was coming to Ahmednagar, but in India they were just underlying in heavy print because people kept coming constantly there even though they weren't supposed to. So I thought, well, I'd just stay in Bombay for a few hours and look around, and all these confusions came about, and the guy said, there's several trains going to Pune, and it's only a four-hour trip, and I thought, well, it's maybe 4.5 hours to Ahmednagar. So I said, well, I'll wait, and this and that. So I said, no, Ahmednagar is another 8 hours, and so I thought, wow, it's because it was the day before the meeting. So I said, I must go now, and the guy said, where's the train? And I went running after the train in the central in Bombay. And I got on, and it was like 150 miles, maybe a little more to Ahmednagar. But the train stops for half an hour and goes for 20 minutes at 12 miles an hour, and then stops for 20 more minutes. So really long trip. And during the whole time, I was still in virtually a state of shock, because I'd spent my whole energy before this saying that, you know, I'm resigned to not seeing Baba, I'm resigned to not seeing Baba, I'm not disappointed by not seeing Baba. I'd really been trying to talk myself into this line, and now I'm seeing Baba, and I just couldn't get that going. I thought, wow, I'm seeing Baba. Really, really sounded strange. So as we got nearer and nearer to Ahmednagar, a huge storm came up, and it got really, really, really black, and there was lots of lightning and thunder, and I thought, wow, this is really incredible. I thought, really, that this was unusual, because the monsoon was almost finished now. Baba had returned to Marizal, and the monsoon in that area is pretty much over. It struck me as being very unusual that they would have. When I saw Adi finally, he said that, you know, he thought Baba was speaking the word that night. He said that he thought this was the beginning of the great destruction. And he'd been up saying, Baba, please, I'm not ready. So I thought, really, really unusual. And so when I got to the station as a result of the storm, it was, the train had been delayed and this and that. It was maybe 1 o'clock, 12, 1, 2 o'clock, something like this. And I didn't have Adi's phone number. I thought he had a phone, but I thought, really, phones don't work if you call the house next door anyhow. And I didn't want to go through the storm to try and get there. And I thought, well, Baba said 8 o'clock, and I told Adi I would be on time, so he shouldn't be upset or worry about anything. I'd just go just as soon as it gets light, as soon as the storm lets up. So this went on until 7 in the morning. That I washed my clothes and stayed in the station, drank chai, and sat around and watched, and it got, finally started getting light. So somehow it was getting late. It was maybe 7. And the guy that was took me, I went in some rickshaw or horse cart. I think I went in a horse cart. And on the way, he took me to the wrong place, and it was really delayed. So we got there at 7:30. Baba said 9. So when we pulled in, Adi came running out. He had his shawl around, really raining. He was just going, where have you been, and how come you didn't call, and when did you get in, did you come last night? Or he was just really in a state. Everybody was jumping around and very excited. It was just completely insane. And I said, well, I told you I'd be on time. And they said, Baba said you're supposed to come at 8, and it's going on 8 now. And it's 9 miles, and the road's flooded, and all these things. And he was really jumping around. And so he went and got Duncan, who's the guy who wrote when they announcement was made that the Wayfarers is being republished. Duncan is the guy who put together the book called The Wayfarers. And so they got Duncan, and Adi said, well, we must go immediately. And he had been really worried all about the storm and that whole thing, and here I hadn't showed up. And Adi told me stories later that, Baba's time things as much as they're postponed or delayed or this or that, in our minds, Baba's time schedule is precise. And he told me many instances later when Baba's time schedule had been violated and of serious consequences that had resulted in people missing by minutes, even with Baba's orders. So when Baba had said 8 o'clock, Adi was really upset. So we got in Duncan's car and we started out of Ahmednagar. It's about 9 miles to the hill, Meherazad, where it was. And he said, Adi said that he was very happy I'd come because that they were going to have a chance of seeing Baba. And I said, well, what do you mean? You people live here all the time. And he said that Baba's seclusion had been so strict that no one had been allowed to see Baba, not even the Mandali. And it was for them a rare treat to be able to go and see Baba as well. So Adi was very happy. And we went up the hill, and there's a place the car stopped, and there's a gate and shrubs. When we got there, it was just like a whole other world. It was so calm and quiet. It was a really, really peaceful place. I had absolutely no doubt that this was where Baba was. It was just really felt warm. And Adi said, you please sit here on this bench by the front of the house. And he said, you just sit here and wait. So Adi went into the house, and he was there for some time, maybe 5-10 minutes. I was just sitting and felt really relaxed, because from the time I'd gotten the telegram, I had really just a hectic time getting there. And here, I was finally aware that I was going to see Baba, and great calm came. And so Adi came out a little bit later and said, you can see Baba now, and you're only to be 5 minutes with Baba. You mustn't ask for more than this. Baba's granted you this darshan. It's very unusual. None of us understand how or why you've been permitted to come to me. You must not ask to stay longer than 5 minutes. And he said, you must not touch Baba. You must not kiss his feet or do any of the traditional things that is done in various religions for showing respect or love or surrender to a master. He said, Baba cares for none of this. You must bring nothing in with you. You must give no obeisance. And he said, you must not touch Baba. And then so I thought, okay, fine. And he said, come this way. He got up. And he went. When he opened, we came in through a door like this. And when we came in, Baba was sitting over in this corner. So as soon as we came in the door like this, Baba was right here. And as soon as I got in the door, Baba went like this. And he leaned out of his chair and I shot straight over. I hugged Baba and he really, really embraced me warmly. And so I came back. Then there were several people sitting along this wall. Maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 people. I was really oblivious to anyone in the room but Baba. My back was watching Baba and motioned for me to sit down. And so people were sitting, everyone was sitting like this against the wall, and Baba was sitting over here. And